This is the Angry Admins Podcast for December 5th, 2006, episode number 6. It's time again for the Angry Admins Podcast. My name is Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
And this show is dedicated to system administrators everywhere, people who do IT support, the last line of defense between you and the clogged tubes of the internets. We're going to discuss technology, IT in the workplace, and where we think information culture is headed. Today we got some new stuff on the radar. Joe, why don't you start with wireless USB?
So this is... This is a nice new technology that's on the horizon. Looks like Belkin is finally coming out with the first product sometime this month. They've been talking about it for a while, but it's based on a product called Ultra Wideband, which doesn't operate, thankfully, in the 2.4 gigahertz range that everything else is in. It actually operates in the 3.1 to 10.6 gigahertz range, and the reason they're allowed to do that is because it's kind of a low-powered solution. And so that makes it legal with the FCC. But what's nice about this is it's full-speed USB 2.0 protocol over wireless. So you can plug in anything into this hub, printers, scanners, whatever, and it'll transmit it wirelessly to your PC, and you won't even be able to tell that it's not wired.
Wow. What was did they have what was the range?
It looks like it's about the same range as like a Bluetooth device, about 30 feet or so.
Oh, okay.
So pretty good range. I mean, I'm sure walls and any sort of metal would limit that, but it's wireless is really coming a long way. And the nice thing is that this won't interfere with cordless phones or your Wi-Fi access point and all that. It's so clogged in that space that it's nice to see something else.
Wow, that's really cool. I saw some stuff this week on BitTorrent. BitTorrent is an application that was freeware written by Bram Cohen a few years back. This is very popular for sharing large files because it allows, a huge group of people to share small bits of the files with each other until everyone has the whole thing. And it really takes advantage of the situation we have now with home users because, it really utilizes the high bandwidth that you have to download while minimizing the impact of your small upload rates. So it lets everyone upload to you while you're downloading. So really good tool for large files. And it looks like now they're finally about to break into the whole media market for movies. There was an announcement this week, a press release, that said in the spring that users are going to be able to purchase movies and TV shows from the BitTorrent website. So this is really pretty big news because, BitTorrent has been, kind of the maligned, child in the past. Like, these BitTorrent guys, they're the ones that are stealing all the media. And, BitTorrent is there's no legitimate uses for it. So this is their chance to prove that, that's not true. And looks like a dollar a piece for TV shows. Some of them going to be one-time rentals. And these aren't just, just anything. They're pretty big names. Big movies. Some of the more popular TV shows and movie studios. So it looks like this is the real deal. And I looked at the BitTorrent website, and their website's come a long way.
Has it?
So yeah, and it looks like too, not only just the big studios, but a lot of the smaller content that people are pushing for free on the web, like comedy skits and podcasts and things like that. So,
do you think people are going to really be that accepting of this? I mean, BitTorrent, people love it. Yes, they love it because it's this cool technology, but I think most people really love it because they get their movies and TV shows for free. do they give you, I guess, are the prices a little better than like iTunes?
I would say so. Oh, they said they start at a dollar. So
who knows what it'll really be. Yeah. I mean, because if they don't give you a price break over iTunes, and if it's a rental, that means there's DRM built in.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they give me some sort of better thing, why would I share my bandwidth with them?
Right. Well, I think they can keep costs down because they don't have to do all of the bandwidth themselves.
Right.
So that may be helping them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're eager to like do legitimate deals
right.
with the big companies. So, I mean, hopefully they'll both kind of be, you know, wanting to smooth things over and says, we'll help you, you help us,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
go legit with all this stuff. And I think maybe people are finally learning, you know, hey, if we have a legitimate way to get these files, then, you know, we'll pay a reasonable price for them instead
sure.
of just, you know, downloading this stuff for free.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. Looks interesting. There was also, as a footnote to that, a rumor on TechCrunch saying that Bram Cohen, which was the first developer of this, was going to resign, but they've come back and released a statement saying
okay.
that he was going to stay with them. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I saw this week is there was a beta release of Parallels Desktop for the Mac this week. So if you don't know about Parallels, it's basically a virtualization software for the new Intel Macs, which lets you run Windows XP basically inside OS X, kind of in a window, gives you this kind of sandbox interface so that you can run all your Windows apps while you're still in OS X versus the product from Apple, which is Boot Camp, where you have to actually reboot and you boot into a full copy of XP. So the nice thing is you don't have to reboot if you want to run like one simple Windows app. It's not quite as fast, but it's getting better.
Nice.
But what's nice about this new release is they're actually doing some amazing things. The first thing they did is they tied into your Boot Camp partition. So if you have Boot Camp installed where you reboot into XP, instead of having a separate XP install on your box for Parallels, it'll actually tie into that that system, so you have a unified Windows XP system, which is that's a big plus. And
yeah.
it looks like you don't have to reinstall XP to get that to work. You just run this little app inside your XP Boot Camp install, and it'll make it work with Parallels.
Nice.
And then the big clincher for me, and this is what I've really been waiting for since I heard the Intel Macs were coming, is a way to basically it'll run XP kind of in the background, and you can run a Windows app in a window by itself, so that it's kind of separated out from the XP. Basically, so it's like you're running a Windows app actually inside OS X.
Nice.
It's not actually doing that, but that's what it feels like. Very similar to, if you remember, the OS 9, OS X transfer, where you could run what they called the classic
mm-hmm.
mode, and it would boot OS 9 in the background, and then you could run your OS 9 apps. So,
yeah.
Very nice little thing.
Yeah, I think that's going to, I don't know, isn't it like $78?
Yeah, it's only $79. You do have to have a copy of XP, so, you know, if you don't have one laying around, that's going to be another 300 or so, but
yeah.
Totally worth it in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is really good. I think this was like one of the last things that were slowing people down from running Windows on a Mac. It's like, oh, well, I got to reboot every time I want
right.
to, you know, flop back and forth. But, you know, if they can just come up in OS X and the, bam, they're there, they can just start off their Windows stuff either within a separate virtual desktop or,
mm-hmm.
you know, just the app just kind of, it looks like it's by itself.
Yeah.
I think this is going to help a lot of people come over to the Mac side. So
yeah, I think your average user would probably be a little overwhelmed with an XP window that you have to go inside, and they'd be confused and, you know, how do I do this? And so I think this is really the final step, and especially business users being able to run those Windows apps that they still need.
Yeah. I read some reviews on this. They said it was actually running pretty fast. That
it
was
does.
Impressive.
It does. It's amazing how fast it runs.
Probably still not for gaming.
No,
you know,
no, but you got your boot camp for that. So.
Right. This week we also had some names come back for the winners in the 2006 SysAdmin of the Year Award. The grand prize goes to Michael Beck of Emergent Technologies, United States. The grand prize winner gets a Washington, D.C. trip. And we had the runners-up. They got some pretty good stuff, too, like MacBooks and stuff like that. So the website, sysadminoftheyear.com, is where you can next year, you know, submit your nominations and throw votes towards the folks who do IT support in your area that you appreciate. The one thing I have to wonder about, though, is it must be hard to get votes, you know, because I mean, if you're a sysadmin, you know that your own people don't appreciate you and other sysadmins don't even appreciate you.
Right.
So everybody probably voted one time, you know, for themselves,
right.
you know, for sysadmin of the year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, congratulations to the folks that won. I'm sure it's well-deserved.
Yeah, all three votes.
All three votes, yeah.
So this week in the toolbox, we're going to start out with Google Apps for your domain. I've been running this on my own stuff for a little while now, and I'm actually pretty happy with it. We all know that I love Google, and I love their apps. And what this does is it lets you take the apps like Gmail, Google Calendar, and kind of brand them for your own domain. So for my domain, I can actually send emails from my domain through Gmail, and it's actually my email using Google servers. And you can kind of do the email part in Gmail already, but then it shows up as, you know, whatever at gmail.com on behalf of blah blah blah. It's kind of kludgy, and yeah. So this is a nice tool. It's free for one thing, and they are going to have some professional versions later that will be paid for. But it lets you do all the basics. Does IM, email, calendar, and it has a nice little control panel, so you can go in, create users. So it's not just limited to one person. You can do, I think it's up to like 15 users per account. It's, you know, even like the Gtalk, the Google Talk, you know, that works. Mm-hmm. So now my email address is actually my Google Talk account, and I can talk to other Gmail users through Google Talk with it, and they just see my email address. It's pretty nice, and it kind of takes Google to the next step. You know, right now it's pretty much just you use their services through their servers, and you can't really personalize it, and it's like the next step for Google to kind of break into business. This would be perfect for like a small, medium business. I wouldn't suggest it yet. They're still kind of working out some of the bugs. Some of the other Google tools don't really interoperate with it very well. Mm. I've had some problems with like Google Reader and some of the other ones when I'm trying to use a singular account throughout the whole thing. They only have certain apps enabled for the Google Apps for your domain. So it can cause some issues, but they are working on it. They're releasing updates fairly frequently, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I think I read this morning that Gmail is officially totally open, and you don't need an invite or anything mm-hmm. anymore. So it's if you don't have a Gmail account and you want to try it out, you're welcome to jump in. You don't need an invite. You don't need any kind of permission or anything. It's there for the taking. So I'd recommend trying that if you haven't already.
Another thing I would probably recommend is Google Apps for Domain. Say if you are kind of the family email host, so you set up like an email account for everybody in your family, this the Google Apps would be perfect for that, because one of the other features built in is the Page Creator, which is kind of Gmail's quick and dirty web page creator. Mm. It's not that advanced, but it's really easy to use, and it's all online, and you can integrate some of the Google gadgets, I think they call them, or whatever, into your website. It's nice to have something easy to use that you can set up for your family.
Right. Yeah, I've looked at it. It's pretty cool. Up next, we have Any Video Converter, which is a small free tool. I say small. It's 14 meg, so that's not too bad. It is free at anydvdconverter.com. That's got dashes in there. Don't sweat the URL. We'll have that in the show notes for all the stuff. But we downloaded it. We tried it. It has a really good interface, very Web 2.0. You basically point it at a file, and you say, I want to convert this, and it has some preset stuff, like if you want to have a preset to convert video for your iPod or for DVDs. It does NTSC and PAL for you folks that are across the pond over there. It even does PSP for the three people in the universe that watch movies on the PSP. But yeah, it's pretty nice. You pick a file, and it has, you know, if you can just do the presets, or you can actually customize the size and the bit rates, you know, if you want to dive down into that. But it is pretty fast. It works pretty good. It doesn't do every single format. So, I mean, you know, if you want to, like, you know, go crazy with XVID, and I mean, it will do those, but it doesn't have everything. So, but I mean, for something free and for something quick, it is, I think it is a very cool tool.
On their website, they talk about that it has the option to also do FLV files, which are the flash files. Did you see anything about that? Or maybe you have to have a special plugin for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't see that in mm-hmm. the one I tried. But I, you know, flash, I don't know if it would be able to do it or not. It's worth checking into, though.
If it does, that'd be a big plus, I think, because Flash is kind of all over the web, and it's really what a lot of people are using when they post things on the web pages now. So it's
the only problem with that is trying to get Flash out of the web page sometimes is hard.
Well, I think that's part of the reason people use it.
Well, yeah. So dang you people for doing that to us.
There are some plugins that we can talk about on future episodes if you have a desire to get Flash video.
Right. Yeah, we need to cover that because we need to do that.
Tune in next time.
That's right. If you want to learn how to steal stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty good tool.
So the final tool this week is a free service. So a big issue right now is file sizes are getting larger and larger, and emailing files, average file size limit is about 8 megabytes. And we've talked in previous episodes about uploading stuff. You know, if you're an sysadmin, you're going to have a website. You're going to upload files to that to share. But even then, sometimes, you know, you don't want to use your host's bandwidth, or you don't want to, you know, spam out something from your URL. And there's several services out there right now that let you do this for free. And one of those is called Pando. We'll have the URL in the show notes. But what this is it lets you email or just send them a link even. But the email thing is my favorite way. Up to a 1 gigabyte file. And you don't have to set up a username. No registration required. Has a Windows and a Mac client, so that's nice. No Linux, unfortunately, but... but it's a nice little interface. The app, you download a little app to get it, so it's not actually, you know, getting it in your email. But the app is nice. It's clean. It runs fairly smooth. And I tested it out, and man, it just worked fantastic. You can pause your uploads midstream, and what it does is it emails out the link to whoever you're emailing it to. They download a .pando file. And then they open up it opens up automatically with their Pando app, and it starts downloading it. And if you're still in process of uploading it, it just says waiting for sender, and then when you're done, it'll start downloading.
Nice.
So, you know, hands off, it's really easy to use. One thing I have noticed, though, it's really kind of meant for a one-to-one send. If I tried while somebody else was downloading my file, if I tried to download it, it's also said waiting for sender. Which is interesting. So it looks like they only let one person hit one file at a time.
Right.
But, I mean, for free, you can't really complain. And the uploads stay on there for around a month. So if somebody deletes the file and they want to go back and get it again, they've got it in their history and they can just go re-download it.
Wow. The interface looks very sweet.
It's really nice.
You know, that has, like, nice tabs, and, you know, it walks you through it, and it's got, like, a download progress bar and your data rates and everything. So that's – and you can pause your stuff. I mean, this is kind of what everybody's sort of been waiting for.
It's nice because, you know, it's everything I wanted and nothing more.
Mm.
A lot of these apps that try to do this, you know, they'll spam you with ads, or they'll, you know – and bundle like 12 other possible applications so you can, you know, toast your bread while you're waiting for the download. I mean, they kept it simple, they kept it free, and it works great. I love it.
Yeah. So all this bandwidth, how are these guys making any money?
You know, I really don't know. I don't know.
Is it ad supported?
I didn't, you know what, have been an ad in the app when I was downloading, but if there was, I didn't really notice it.
Wow.
I mean, they must have ads in it.
It's still beta, right? It is. So
yeah, it's a work in progress. But I had no real hiccups or anything.
Huh? Supposedly spyware and adware free.
Yeah.
So wow. Yeah,
I didn't notice a significant increase in pop-ups when I installed it. So.
Yeah.
I was really happy with it, and the file I sent to, I actually sent it to somebody who's in another country. Mm. So it does work, you know, outside the U.S., which, you know, it's on the internet, so it should, but. And he didn't have any complaints, and it worked really well.
In our main story this week, we're focusing on security topics. We're going to start out with Joe talking about antivirus software.
So, antivirus. There's lots of options, and depending on your implementation, you know, it kind of depends on what you choose. But for a long time, I was recommending, especially for home users, some of the free antivirus softwares out there. The big one that I always would recommend was AVG, and there's a free edition on their website. But lately, I have not been very happy with it. I actually had it installed for about a year, and I came in and scanned with uninstalled it, installed another app, and actually found several viruses. And I had noticed that my system was starting to run kind of slow and chuggy, and you know, had some weird pop-ups, and I just like, man, this, I don't really trust this anymore. So
yeah,
I used to recommend them like crazy, but I don't know. What do you think? Have you had any experience with these free antivirus softwares?
I used to run AVG probably about 2 years ago. I ran it for about a year and a half. I mean, I quit using it about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, probably pre 7.0 days for that package. I liked it all right, and basically I had some Norton or whatever for my mm-hmm. main system, but I didn't want to buy two licenses, and so I was like, well, what can I throw on my second PC just to kind of, you know, have sort of a warm fuzzy that, yeah, at least I got something on it. So I downloaded AVG and I used to run it on there, but it seems like it needs a little more help to mm-hmm. keep it going. Like, it pops up and says, hi, please, you know, update me and restart me. And you know, it kind of restarts itself over and over again as
right.
it's patching itself. I don't know if you remember that, but I never really got that feeling that I was as well protected as some of the more widespread packages like Norton, Symantec.
Mm-hmm.
And that may just be, you know, brainwashing after all these years of using that stuff at work. But I don't know. I don't get a really good feeling that it's as good as the paid software.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the feeling that I get from it as well. I mean, I kind of feel bad now thinking back all the people I recommended it for. Hopefully they're not using it still. If you're out there, buy something. every once in a while I'd go and check it, and you're right, it, you know, it doesn't really do auto updates very well. It didn't seem like it was actually scanning, you know, do the real time scanning,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't do like the background scannings like the good ones would do. So I don't know. I guess my conclusion would be, you know, I wouldn't use a free version now. So if you're not going to use a free version, what else is out there? The big push from the big companies right now, like McAfee and Norton, are these like all in one firewall, security, antivirus, blah.
I hate those things.
You know, Norton used to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just keep adding stuff. It's just like all the burning software and basically any software that's been around for a long time. They just try to add features to get you to keep buying it. You know, Microsoft Office. and it just makes it slower. And if it's your antivirus software, those are tied so tightly to your kernel that you just... You can't have that. It slows it down. You try to uninstall it. It doesn't uninstall. And it just seems like it's causing problems left and right. And, you know, to get rid of it, you basically have to format your computer and reinstall.
Yeah.
So I don't really recommend those all-in-one apps. My favorite, honestly, is the Symantec Corporate Edition. I'm not sure the easiest way to get it for home use. Most of the time at work, you can get a free copy that they'll let you use at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple install. It runs well. It auto-updates well. It scans automatically. And the best thing about it is it just doesn't use that much memory.
Right. I tell you what, there have been so many people, and by so many, I mean like two that I can think of. No, but there have been so... It seems like there have been all these cases in my experience where... People would come to me and say, you know, I installed this, you know, Norton thing, and now I can't do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? Yep. Well, I can't browse. I can't get to my email. I can't do anything.
Yep.
And I'm going to look at their computer, and of course I'm like, okay, you got your network cable plugged in. Did you reboot? And, you know, I'm looking at the simple stuff, and then, you know, finally I'm looking at, well, you know, let's look at this Norton thing. And it's all this firewall's got all of its hooks in the system,
yep.
And it's like... I'm going to protect you from yourself by disabling everything.
If you can't get out, you can't get a virus.
Right. You can't get hurt if you're locked in the closet. But, so invariably, you know, if you uninstall that, then magically all their stuff all comes back. So, you know, I never recommend the all-in-one firewall, mm-hmm. antivirus, you know, anti-spyware. You know, it installs like 22 apps on
right.
the machine. So those are just not the win.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that's kind of nice about the corporate edition is you pay once and you're done.
Right.
You know, those home ones, they're like, every year it's like, pay us $20 again so that we can give you the new updates.
Right.
And then, you know, if companies are using that, and then the IT guy, they can't afford them anymore. So, for example, the company I used to work for, they had all these, you know, consumer-level antivirus softwares that they weren't paying for the updates for.
Yeah.
So when I started there, they actually had machines that hadn't been updated since 1997, and I started there in 2000.
So wait a minute. It was the engine hadn't been updated, or the engine and the definitions?
Both. So they had virus definitions from 3 years back.
Wow.
You know, and that range, you know, there was all kinds of crazy worms and stuff going out, and that machine was so infected, I just wiped it.
Yeah, but at least they were protected from, like, the 1989 Robert T. Morris worm.
Hey, you know, that's true. It was something.
Oh, man, that's bad. Yeah, so, I don't know. Antivirus is one of those things that you have to have it, but they all, you know, are kind of bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, if there's any way that you can take what you use at work home with you, and a lot of times they'll justify it because they'll say, if you take work home, don't go home and get infected and come back.
Right.
You know, so
yeah.
They want you to have something at home. So, yeah, a Norton Symantec, that would be my pick, so. Moving on, let's talk for a second about firewalls. Of course, you know, every business needs firewalls. Homes need firewalls. If you don't have it, you're going to have hackers and worms and everything else, you know, banging away at your computer. Basically, it comes down to these days whether or not you want to build or buy. We've been on both sides of it. We have built firewalls and we've bought security appliances. I guess my stance is that it's probably better to go ahead and throw Linux on a PC, throw some network cards in there, configure it up, get your IP chains going, and just make your rules and let that be your firewall. But what do you think, Joe? What's your preference?
Well, you know, I've done that, and I just feel like it's so kludgy, and it's a pain to use. I mean, you know, yeah, I'm a fan of Linux. I think it can do a lot of things, but I just feel like the firewalling out there, I'll probably catch some flack for this, but I feel like, you know, you buy something and you plug it in and you get the nice interface and, you know, you get the web interface or you get some sort of remote management software. And especially for like a small, medium business, you know, they can't afford a lot of IT support, so they've got, you know, the guy who's trying to do the best he can. And man, an appliance is perfect for that. And even a medium business, you get something nice. You know, there's several products out there that you just plug it in and it's ready to go, and then you can customize it to your heart's content. And the other thing that a lot of these appliances are adding, they're adding like spam blocking and antivirus scanning so, you know, it doesn't even get into your system. It's blocked before it even gets there. So that's really nice if you don't already have something like that in place. And the final thing that's nice is VPN.
Mm.
They have simple VPN, a lot of them, you know, 10 or 12 clients. So users can connect from home. You don't have to set up some crazy, you know, open VPN server. It's all ready to go. They've got software for them to install, so they can just double-click and go.
Do you really feel, though, that, I mean, you can customize those as much as you want? I mean, do you ever feel like kind of trapped within their interface and their GUIs and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, sometimes, but, you know, I'm a designer. I like the GUI. I mean, I like the command line too, but I feel like I have more of an understanding of how things are going if I see it visually. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a limitation on my side, but if I'm going in and I'm typing in a command in an IP chain or IP tables, I question whether it's even going to be working right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on an appliance, you know, I feel like if I'm blocking FTP, that's what it's doing. You know, I don't have to like look up, I know the port for FTP, but you know, that's a bad example, but
mm-hmm.
I don't have to like look up the ports and, you know, am I blocking the right port and am I, I don't know, man. I just like the appliance. It's easy. Plug it in. You're ready to go.
The internet appliance.
Yeah. It sounds pretty bad, but I don't know.
Nah, that's cool. Lastly, we're going to talk quickly about network scanning, some of the options for that. Joe, what did, what are the high points for scanners?
So the idea behind these is you've got this large network, you know, 30, 40, 200, 1,000, whatever your range is. You've got all these computers. You don't want to go around and check to make sure that they're all updated, they're all patched, they've all got, you know, their firewalls turned on, or they're, you know, it's just the job of a sysadmin is to make it his own job easier. So there's several scanning softwares out there. We'll start with one from Microsoft. It's called the Microsoft Baseline Security Analyzer. We'll post a link in the show notes to that. But this is a nice little tool from Microsoft. You know, I think they realize that patching isn't something that it's something very, very important on a Windows machine. So they've made it easy. You run this little app, and it'll actually go out and scan your entire network. You enter in. It's best if you're running it from the domain controller, if you're running a domain, but you can do it from basically any machine. And it'll go out and scan every machine on your network, check the patches, compare it to what patches are out there, and come back and tell you what you need to update, what machine, the IP address. It's a pretty cool little app. And you know, I have to give props to Microsoft for this, because they usually don't make this kind of stuff free. I mean, I'm surprised they don't, you know, say, you must give us your firstborn child and, you know,
right,
every child thereafter to get this app.
Yeah.
So that's a good one from Microsoft. You know, it's not perfect. It does have some issues. It's not going to be guaranteed to get every machine correct. And it may not be totally updated. You do have to update it every time you run a scan. And, you know, if they haven't updated that compared to Windows Update, it may not quite line up perfectly. Mm-hmm. But it's a good place to start if you've got Windows machines.
Makes a nice report.
Yeah, it's really a pretty good app. I would recommend try it out. Download it. It's free. If you don't like it, you know, throw it away. Empty it, you know, throw it in your trash. But it's worth seeing, I think. So,
or you could spend tens of thousands on ISS.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, it is a fantastic application. You know, there's some really good paid ones, but again, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, there's a free all-in-one app from Tenable Network Security called Nessus. This has been around for a little while, and it actually scans, you know, OS X, Linux, Solaris, FreeBSD, Windows, everything. So that's pretty amazing. And you download it, and it actually scans for all vulnerabilities. It will scan for open ports. It's pretty crazy all the things that it actually checks. I mean, I scanned our network when we were doing some remote stuff and found some things. I was like, I can't believe it caught that. You know, some stuff that's just open by default on Windows that, you know, probably wouldn't cause any problems, but it lets you know it's there. It also rates them by security level. So if it's a serious open vulnerability, it'll let you know, or if it's just something you could kind of ignore, but if you want to be perfect, you can change it.
Prioritized, yeah.
That's so nice. It gives a nice report. The report's in HTML, so you know it's not limited to some log viewer that they have. I've had pretty good success with it. Again, you know, it's free, so I wouldn't put total trust in it. If you have a pretty large corporate network, mm-hmm, I think it's probably still worth paying for the high-end software. But if you're just getting started, you don't have a big IT budget, you know, this is definitely better than doing nothing.
Yeah. One word of caution, though, if you are part of a larger corporate organization, and if there is kind of a broader IT department out there, be sure to let them know if you're going to start scanning.
Yeah.
If you're a user or an IT guy, because if they see you attacking every machine on their network, your phone will probably start to ring.
Yeah, I mean, especially this tool, it definitely can be used for evil very easily. So they're gonna come down and lock you down pretty quick if they see you scanning and you don't have permission.
I guess this could be good for home too.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, you want to scan your home machine if you feel like, you know, you're a good power user. It's not the easiest app to do, but it does have a GUI. It's not command line or anything. Basically what you do is you run that's a client server type setup. So you run a server side to it, and then you install the client, but they can be on the same machine.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty nice.
Cool.
So, you know, we're talking about security, we're talking about, you know, firewalls, antivirus. Do you think all this stuff is really that necessary still? I mean, we've got, you know, if you have a firewall, if you have a router at home, you know, do you need to turn on your Windows firewall? Do you really need antivirus? If you've got Firefox and you're a smart user, You think you really need it still?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Here's my only thing. I don't think the average person at home is going to get hacked, you know, by, you know, Johnny Hacker X number 13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that lead hacker's not going to, you know, go after your grandma's computer, except for in the case of botnets.
Good point.
The worms and stuff out there that spread and basically turn all these home computers that are unprotected into zombies, and then those in turn are just used for DDoS attacks and stuff like that. So even if you don't have stuff to protect, as a courtesy to the millions of other people who you will be attacking if you don't lock down your machine, you know, please install your Windows patches, use a router, you know, if you have a cable modem or whatever, it's a good idea. But I still think it's necessary.
I have to agree with you. I mean, I think honestly, if it were me, if I was running, especially if I'm running Linux, you know, I'm pretty safe. But if I'm running Windows at home and I'm using Firefox and I'm browsing intelligently, I could probably get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
But why even try? You know, because if you don't have antivirus, how are you going to know? How are you going to know you got one?
Right.
You're not. And then you're participating in the global spam problem, with which we talked about last week. And, man, nobody needs to help those guys out.
Right. Yeah. So I think you need to do it. I think it's just good practice to, you know, make sure your stuff is as locked down as can be.
Yeah. And so, you know, one final point. I think all these tools and all this hardware and software is important. But, you know, the real problem, you know, is the users. I mean, if you don't educate your staff on how to browse intelligently, you know, they're going to bring in a thumb drive from home and they're going to throw it in, or they're going to open their email attachments and install a virus. And so, you know, the real problem here is the human. I mean, you know, you can lock down a computer and they're going to still find a way to break it.
Right.
So, you know, education, I think, is key to all these issues.
Site of the week.
So for our site of the week, we're going to follow the security theme. Just cover this real quick. It's pretty basic, but it's housecall.antivirus.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. And what this is from Trend Micro, one of the antivirus companies out there, and you can go to it and actually scan your PC for free with an online antivirus scanner. This is a good tool to have in your back pocket if you are going to somebody's house and you're worried about their machine, and you think it's got some viruses on it. You can easily just use this utility, scan it for free. It'll work in both Firefox and IE, though it does work better in IE because it uses some ActiveX in that form, and it seems like it goes a little faster. So try it out. I've had pretty good success with it, caught some viruses with it, so I would highly recommend it, and it's free, so how can you turn it down?
All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for episode number 6. Be sure to check us out on the web at www.angryadmins.com, on iTunes, or in your favorite RSS reader. Until next week, I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
And you guys take care.